Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled.
Film.
Conversation.
Hooray!
Hooray! So, guys, we're here to talk about a film again. Just in case you don't know who we are, there's little pictures underneath the link usually, but I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. And with me is Abigail Bain
Hello.
and Anthony Evans.
Hello.
So, this week's pick was Abby's, and what was it?
This week, Rich, I put forward Muriel's Wedding.
Mira's Wedding is an interesting choice because possibly today, as we record it, is our other missing member's wedding. He's having a wedding for himself and his wife. that's usually how they go. You usually don't have the wife before, it's after the ceremony, just in case anyone's confused as to how weddings work. But the point is, it's thematically linked, see? Isn't it, Abby?
It is.
Also, congratulations.
Yes. Yay! Jamie and Tiffany! Yay!
And sorry if this is the future and you're going through a bad patch and considering a divorce. Or, in fact, you are divorced and this is a sad reminder of what once was. So, whichever applies now when you're currently listening to the podcast, tearing up. Aww. I'm
Yikes.
sure you're having a lovely marriage. Let's get on with the podcast, though.
You're so horrible.
I know.
All the time.
Yeah. But we did pick it because, Jamie's getting married, so we should talk about weddings in his absence, because secretly we all want to be there. But who can afford flights these days all the way to America? How selfish of him, having a marriage in America. Ugh. That's not where we are.
Shall I do the vital statistics, Rich?
Yep.
Muriel's Wedding is from 1994. It is written and directed by PJ Horgan. How, actually, thinking about it, how do you summarise Muriel's Wedding?
Like this. Muriel's Wedding is about Muriel, who's obsessed with weddings, is sick of her boring life in Australia, and decides to up sticks to Sydney and cause a lot of problems for herself and her family.
Can you just use that?
I can, but there'll be no context for why Rich read it out unless I explain it now. And that, Abby, to answer your question I edited out, was how I would sound if I ever did these stupid intro thingies. Who made this film and appeared in it?
It was written and directed by PJ Hogan. It stars Toni Collette, Rachel Griffiths, and Bill Hunter, along with a bunch of other people.
So, Abby, the other reason we were interested in this is it's kind of a tangentially linked film to another spoiler filled we did, which was Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And it's links in that it's Australian, and it also has,
A preoccupation with ABBA.
yes, and one of the actors crosses over as well, don't they?
That is a bit of an Australian thing, though. ABBA are quite big over there.
That's what I wanted to talk about. But I've seen relatively few Australian movies, but a good half of them are nuts for ABBA.
Yes,
Well, ABBA are big. Sorry.
I was just saying it does reflect society, I suppose.
Yeah, if you're an ABBA fan, usually you're a mega ABBA fan. Like, there's the odd casual person, maybe myself included, but they are a mega pop power, the likes of which, that may not be seen again because it's just such a, weird phenomena, ABBA. But yeah, this film is very Muriel's Wedding is very ABBA heavy and is Australian and kind of weird and offbeat, and it feels like a companion piece. Not companion, but it could definitely be in a box set of Australian movies that are similar in tone or something. That wouldn't be a very catchy reason to join them, but it was on our mind. Priscilla was on our mind when we viewed this. Anthony, you weren't here for the Priscilla conversation, were you?
I was not, but I have seen the film. And yes, you're right. I definitely see the similarities.
But what were you... Go on now.
I was just saying, but I've seen weirder groups of movies put together into a box set.
Yeah, what would be the third? Strictly Ballroom? To make it a, like a trilogy of Australian...
There's no ABBA in that.
But there is the guy who plays Bob in Priscilla.
He's in all the Australian films.
He is in all
He is
those
in a
three
lot of
films.
them.
He's the link. He's
Yeah.
the link. It's the Bill Turner box set.
Yeah. So well done, Bill Turner, and RIP and stuff, poor guy. But yeah, he's well, we shouldn't really start here. But anyway, well, why did you put this to us? What were you expecting? you know, from this movie the first time you saw it?
Well, I went into my selection process wanting to find something pertaining to weddings in some way. And the first one I thought was Muriel's Wedding, even though I couldn't remember it that well. So I put it into my shortlist. And then as I went through other movies, none of them really cut the mustard. And Muriel's Wedding, even though I couldn't remember it, I was just like, no, I want to watch this again. And for what I do remember, it's interesting.
Yeah. Anthony, had you seen this before?
Yes, I have seen this before. I remember when I was young, like when it first came out, was it 1994? So around that era, like certain like female members of my family like really liked it. So I remember seeing it when I was quite young. And I remembered enjoying it, even though I think most of it probably just went over my head. And I think, Abby, I might be wrong, but did we also study this at one point in film studies?
I don't think... I think it was an optional one.
Okay.
Though it, I don't think we did it, but I think we had the option to do it.
Well, it came up there again, and I've seen it again, and I liked it again, so I was just... this time coming around thinking, oh, well, just a film I like and know about. What a strange thing for film bin.
Well, I hadn't seen it before. I think my only relationship to this film before I'd seen it was when I went to Videoland to rent videos when I was a kid. I think it might have been on the shelves and I might have seen Muriel chucking her, looking, you know, happy and being covered in confetti.
Well, it fits the film bin criteria for being... It was famous when it came out, and then it sort of... People forgot about it after a while.
Yeah. But we've dusted it off and put it in our VHS players collectively, and given it a rewatch. And so, you know, we're here to discuss it. We won't go through it chronologically, but we will cover a lot of the basics. So I guess the type of genre it is rom-com, but it's kind of different to that, because when I was watching it, I was like, oh, it's a rom-com, I get it. It's going to be a bit silly and cartoonish and everyone will be happy at the end. And then it wasn't. It just kind of went a bit dark in places. Even though it tried to maintain a kind of goofy, like, observational kind of comedy, it still had loads of really dark stuff towards the middle and end that threw me.
It was the moment when Rhonda becomes paralysed that just sort of gives you a little bit of a slap in the face, really.
Yeah, because it is just bouncing along, being a bit, ugh, isn't small life in Australia funny, and aren't my family morons, and aren't my friends jerks? And then my friend is now dying of cancer. Whoa? So it's a bit of a handbrake turn in terms of tone.
Yeah, I think it's just because the whole thing is just kind of a satire of, like, Australian life and culture, and just any time you satire something, there's always going to be like the dark element to it.
Yeah, you do have to go there sometimes.
I wouldn't. It's kind of a bit harsh calling it dark because I don't think it goes that far.
No,
because it's,
right, okay,
because like all of the moments are really kind of small and low key.
Yes, let me revise that then. It's not that it becomes quite dark. It's more the things that happen don't usually appear in like a usual, in a traditional sitcom, in a kind of rom-com about, you know, being bullied and being an outsider. Like, you kind of go, okay, the start opens with Muriel being basically treated as like a loser by her shallow friends. And you go, okay, like you kind of, it sets it up as like it's going to be a kind of high school-y-ish rom-com that we've seen loads of times, and then it totally is unpredictable. You never know when it's going. It's got quite a fast pace. It just sort of skips over lots of time, and it's just really surprising rather than getting bleak. But it has some stuff in there you're like, oh, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, surprising is the right word. Thinking about back at it and thinking of all like the moments, they're all very small moments, like when they're dancing to ABBA, or when like they're in the restaurant with the dad and stuff like that. And it's all kind of, well, it's not particularly immediately kind of visually iconic like Hollywood films and big films tend to be, if you see what I mean there.
No, it hasn't got that kind of big impact at the end where you kind of go, right on. I mean, there is a kind of right on, hooray, Muriel's learned a life lesson at the end, like rom-coms will have. But it is smaller moments that make up the whole film, and they kind of catch you off guard because they sort of don't feel enough, and yet in like as a whole, it works. But they're just little bits, and you're right, it's kind of not that classic American rom-com narrative, I would say. Abby, you had a comparison, Abby, that was like, it's like not quite like something like Catch Me If You Can, is it?
Well, that was the only film I could think of where someone had stolen a very large amount of money and was on the run in the sense that they were spending it living a certain way. And with this, she takes a lot of money from her family, but she spends it in a way that's so mundane. She goes to... Well, first she has a holiday, but it's not fine. But it's not even a particularly outlandish holiday. And then she goes to Sydney, but she gets a job in a video store.
Yeah, whereas normally this thing would escalate and she'd keep lying and spending blank checks and, you know, living off of her parents' money and, you know, causing problems and lying, and it would escalate and she'd still learn a lesson. But in this, her lesson is learnt sort of like as an afterthought in the movie.
Sort of incrementally.
Yeah.
In this.
It doesn't build to a big crescendo and like it's just not a very usual story arc, you know? Like, it's odd. I guess the thing with Muriel is she's weird in as much as they dress her a bit frumpily and make her look a bit plain, but then at other times where her life's going a bit better, she does look quite attractive and more conventional.
I think that's a testament to Toni Collette's acting, really. I think she like really puts a lot into it and she really comes across as the character.
Yeah, because she's very attractive.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Just really bubbly and happy and kooky, and she really captures that and the kind of, like, the innocence she has, sort of.
She, I don't know how much time they're covering, but she does look really young when she's in that terrible leopard dress at the start at the wedding. Mm. And then when she comes, after her actual wedding at the end, she looks like she's matured, even though probably not that much time has passed. And that is all Toni Collette making her seem really young and stupid, and then making her seem a bit older and slightly wiser.
Because really, she's quite a complicated character. By the end of the film, it would be very easy for her to come off as kind of unlikable. But she doesn't.
Yeah.
And I think that's a testament to her acting in this.
Yeah, because when she's at the start, particularly, she has a kind of ability to play on this kind of gormless, thick persona. It's just, she's a bit, you know, pathetic, and she just sort of looks like an idiot and is like a big victim of the story. But then she does very proactive things that are essentially based on, you know, lies and deceit and denial and things. And, you know, she's a very interesting character. And it plays on this idea that she's described as ugly by her peers, even though she isn't really. She's fairly nice looking. And it's just how she, well, maybe the confidence or how other people see her depends on how attractive she is. Or I don't know. Like, it's definitely trying to say something about image, which is a very, you know, high school rom-com narrative to have, but it's really different to that. I don't know. But then I guess the main topic it's about is Muriel and her obsession with weddings. And
that's the thing about Muriel for me is, yeah, she is a total psycho for weddings.
Yeah. I mean, it opens with a wedding to contextualize things. And, you know, it sets up this idea that she has four sort of friends who are all kind of the popular girls who are quite vacuous and shallow. And they dislike her because, you know, they dress her, she's dressed frumpily and is a bit of a gorm or a goofball. And what I quite liked is to set the idea up is they just blatantly say, like, after she catches the bouquet, they're all annoyed with her, like they are all the time. oh, Muriel, you've ruined everything by just being here again. Like, and they want her to give the bouquet to one of the other friends, and it's just a kind of... It's the first proper joke, and it works really well to set up this wedding theme. Abby, you maybe going to say something about her obsession with weddings.
This film could so easily have been a really dark drama about someone who's really messed up. She's obsessed with weddings. She's a compulsive liar. She's stolen money. And then later on, her friend has cancer and is in a wheelchair. Her dad is having an affair. Her mum is having some kind of nervous breakdown. There are so many things about this that should have been a really dark movie, but they decided to make it a romantic comedy.
Do you think they could have pushed it in a more Carrie direction? Like,
I don't. Carrie's a bit far, but I feel like it's just there's sort of a schism in this movie that I find incredibly interesting. There's neither one thing nor the other.
There's a kind of thin line, kind of between her and Kathy Bates from Misery.
Yeah.
And it's like,
she doesn't hobble anyone.
No.
All it takes, go on.
But she does have a disabled friend.
But she doesn't hobble her. So, we all find Muriel compelling.
Yes. I think, like, one of the big reasons we do kind of like her throughout the film is because everyone else in the film is horrible.
Yeah.
so wonderfully horrible, like, people, and they're even worse than she is.
Yeah. And what's weird is there are other victims other than Muriel, and none of them really get a break. Like, even, like, the mum in particular has a horrible time, seemingly is in a marriage that's going badly, at least, you know, she's treated badly, even if she doesn't seem like she knows she is. And it's just sad for her. I mean, we should talk about the side characters that make Muriel's life so interestingly horrible. What have we got? Do someone want to list them off?
Well, we can talk about her friends collectively. There's this group of four women who she went to school with, and is friends with in the sense that she doesn't need to know anyone else.
If she tags along with them, despite them not liking her very much, I think. They literally boot her out of the group at one point, and she just starts crying, and they somehow turn it so that she's being selfish by crying while someone else is having a moment. But they are horrible to her. But in a way, they need her so they can all, you know, bond against Muriel. I think it was a mistake for them to boot her out. But it's good for Muriel because she becomes more independent. But they are a group of a cackle of horrible ladies.
Yeah, and I don't really remember any of their names or any of their specific characters, but I think that's kind of the intention, that they're supposed to be like just like this group that exists in real life that are shallow and more like interested in themselves.
Yeah,
and appearances.
They're not particularly good friends to each other either. One of them sleeps with the groom of another one on the wedding day.
That guy looked like the biggest surfer scumbag ever as well. Just so blonde with his weirdly, like that weird Australian where they're both blonde and tanned and somehow long-haired and amazing looking, even though he's kind of weird to me. I don't know. That's just about my personal preferences, it seems. Never mind. But it was just that weird thing where even this small group of, you know, mean girls haven't got that great lives. They're kind of small town interested. They're kind of vacuous and two dimensional, and therefore are a group rather than individuals. And the weirdest bit for them is when they're all at some kind of they're on vacation and having like a luau party. They're all dressed in weird like costumes that have bottles of fruit and inflatable bananas and stuff in their hair, and they just look so weird and strange.
Yeah, but unfortunately it's like that's they are Muriel's kind of barometer for what life should be.
Yeah. And it you know, her want of acceptance is probably created some, you know, Freudian problems for herself or something. You know, she got some issues, and she's, because of her, you know, connection to them, the bar for her life is set a bit low. Her dad essentially just wants her to get a job. All of his kids, he's obsessed with them getting jobs and not disgracing him. And he, I guess he's the next person to talk about. And Bill is a slightly failed politician who's always, like, kind of... Every scene he's in, he seems to be in a restaurant schmoozing with either businessmen or the people around him. And he's kind of trying to be a big deal in a small pond kind of thing, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got a lot of ambition. And because of that, he's kind of always undermining his family and Muriel, because he feels like they're not kind of living up to him, or they're dragging him down.
Yeah, and he's an appalling character. And all the way through, he's there to kind of irk Muriel and be horrible to his family. And yet, he's kind of forced into being responsible for his family and caring for them slightly at the end. But he doesn't show any remorse, even at his lowest point where Muriel is, you know, at the very end, where Muriel confronts him and says, you know, basically you're a jerk and you have to look after the rest of the kids in the family. And, you know, he still is kind of horrible and self-obsessed and, like, doesn't learn anything really. He just looks a bit sad at his burnt grass and then presumably joins his children to watch the cricket.
But yeah, one of the things I like about this movie is that nobody learns any lessons really. Muriel, she learns a lesson of she hasn't been very nice to her friend. I get the feeling that really she hasn't reformed.
She still is obsessed with leaving her small town behind. That's the main achievement of her and her friend, is we want to leave our small town. I'm sure we can all relate. We all live in a small town. But that's the only thing that she keeps. Her wedding obsession stops, and she becomes her own person. I think the idea is she's searching for an identity, and she's falsely thinks, well, if she gets married, that'll solve all of her identity problems. So I think she is the one who learns the biggest lesson, if not all of the lesson. She doesn't fully, you know, change everything, but that's the idea, right?
Yeah.
So we mentioned the dad, who's obnoxious and doesn't really learn, but it's good to learn. I mean, he's really good, that kind of everyman Australian smarmy bloke who knows everyone in town thing is perfect. That's slightly too right wing, slightly offensive, sort of a family man, but kind of obscene.
Just it was perfectly observed the way he kept running into that woman in restaurants saying, "That's Deirdre Chambers. What a coincidence. Deirdre, come over." I've never seen someone so obviously having an affair.
Yeah, even when they're like in a different city altogether, they still do it that way.
Yeah. I mean, who has the affair with your family around, really? That's the question to ask. But that's one of the interesting things about the film is you think, okay, this dad's a jerk, he's going to have a comeuppance. But it's kind of... he doesn't. And the victim that he's created... like, his wife is a victim of all this, and the wife has kind of moronic children that she loves, but they're all kind of hopeless. Like, you know, all of Muriel's brothers and sisters are just a bit, you know, deliberately derpy looking and kind of goofballs, and like, they don't have jobs, they sit around watching TV, but there's nothing wrong with them, there's people, they're just, you know, a bit, you know, dim, and I don't know, there's nothing really wrong with them, apart from their dad hates the fact that they're all living in the house doing nothing.
Yeah,
and
but then you get the impression, as in the stuff that Bill says himself, he keeps lining them up with stuff to do, but it's never their idea, it's always his idea. And it doesn't sound like it's stuff that's appropriate.
Yeah, and it should be a film, perhaps, about a dad learning to, you know, understand his children, and that doesn't happen. And the mother, who's the victim in this, I guess, is always sort of distracted looking and is sort of bossed around, and is always, you know, blamed and treated badly by the dad. And really, you'd expect it to go in the direction of, at some point, she becomes more independent or teaches her husband a lesson. But no, she, you know, feels the brunt of the abuse and decides to commit suicide.
The film, really, thinking about it now, it seems like lots of, like, little films in one. Like, or at least, like, the obvious narrative of a film in one. For example, there's like at the beginning where she's like outcast from her friends, and then she goes on holiday, and then in any typical kind of rom-com, she would then find herself, and that would be the end of the film. But no, yeah. it keeps going after that, and then it becomes a film about her moving away from her little home to the big city, and that's a whole other different narrative. But then within that, there's also the narrative of her and her friend like losing the ability in her leg, which could itself be a whole film just separately. So
it rather ambitiously decided to do the moving town film, the growing up and learning to be a self film, the my friend is crippled film, and what else did we get? There was others in there you mentioned.
Well, there's like her obsession film with
the obsession with weddings. Yeah,
there's lots of
narratives,
and it feels like a lot crammed into one. And by the end, like a lot of things are kind of left open, and you're not quite sure. The main one I'm thinking of right now is Muriel's brother. Because there's not a lot of focus on him, but there's just enough to give him a lot of character and make you wonder at the end, like, where is he going at the end of this? And really, that happens for a lot of the characters in this.
Yeah, they're almost, because it's quite a fast pace, we get through all these stories by jumping through time without a real sense of what's happened. You think, that we see where this is going, and we're skipping to the important bit of this. The whole my best friend has a tumour storyline, that happens in, I've fallen down, and we should go to hospital. I've got cancer. I'm rehabilitating. The rehabilitation has failed. I've had the surgery, and now I'm permanently in a wheelchair. That, it happens so quickly, without any of the slow build, and like you say, if these were individual films, they'd draw that out a bit longer into a bigger narrative. But it does them all, and it does them quickly.
Yeah, and like all of them very understated, like I said. Like none of them are very showy or full of emotion and action like you would expect from like a big like romantic comedy from this. Well, I wouldn't say this is a big romantic comedy. It's like Australian films kind of have that balance between kind of the feel of a Hollywood film and the feel of a British film, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's that weird combination of local reference comedy and stuff, and you know, comedy about people and drama about people that kind of creates a sort of unusual tone, doesn't it? That sort of British and American feel.
Yeah, but it has that kind of, because it's set in, you know, these beautiful sunny places, it always comes off like as a Hollywood film because they're always shot in LA kind of thing. Mm. It has that kind of cinematography of like a Hollywood film, but it's still like a really small, low-key kind of like British film, if you see what I mean.
It is that weird, like Australia has created a thing called the kitchen sink romantic comedy, where it's kind of about dark topics, but it's told in a rom-com feel. I don't know, it's really odd. Had we covered all the... Oh, you mentioned the brother character, actually, and how there's one of the brothers of Muriel has a story of he's messing about playing like some kind of sports game on a very small, in a small garden with lots of grass that needs cutting, and the mum wants him to cut it, and he's just messing about playing with rubbish. and then later on, the mother, in frustration, has burnt the garden, and is kind of like, okay, that's a micro story there. Yeah. Actually, there was more to it.
Yeah, it's just that whole bit at the end, like when Muriel goes back because she's heard her mother's died, and all the children are just kind of like moping about the house. And there's just like a lot like inferred onto the brother because, well, first of all, you have like the burning lawn outside, which is obviously going to be playing on his mind. But in the last scene, the last thing he did to his mother was like insult her. But it never really deals with him in a verbal way. It's all kind of just looks and like feelings.
And that comes back to my point about the mother being a victim in the story, and then just it culminates in a tragedy with her not really coming to grips with the fact that her husband's left her for another woman, and that he's horrible, and that, you know, she's lived this horrible life, and that she doesn't deserve being treated the way she has. And then she dies, and no one learns anything, And it's just, oh, what? You can't do that. She was nice. She was kind of funny the way she would, you know, repeat what the dad shouted and look distantly out in the world. And there was the whole thing going on with her. I don't know. And they just said, no, she's going to die and we're not going to have anyone learn a lesson from her death. Only tangentially, really.
Yeah, and again, it's like all of that happens off screen. We don't see the film of the put upon mother going crazy and killing herself.
No, it's just it's like, you know, they hint at stuff and they show a little bit of interaction between her and the family, but it's a minor story really. And then it's got like broad comedy in that the dad pays off some police officers that have arrested Muriel for nicking some claws at one point, and they're paid off with beer. And, you know, it's kind of like, it doesn't fit, I don't know, that kind of world.
That was with, I sort of felt bad for the store detective, actually.
The one who looked like Deirdre Rashid on Coronation Street.
Yeah, she did. Because she was doing her job really well. And both times she caught one of the Heslops, it just got swept onto the carpet.
Yeah, they were kind of dealing with a sub-story again, another tiny micro-story about scandal and the press. Because they're sort of interested in Bill as a politician, his name keeps being disgraced by not only him being potentially corrupt, but his family being a bunch of thieves, it seems.
Because we're meant to be on Muriel's side, and because the mum is portrayed fairly sympathetically, there's this inference that we're supposed to want them to get off. But in a way, if Muriel had been caught and had actually been prosecuted for the theft, then that would be better for her character than to have it swept under the carpet. Bill is facilitating his kids having no direction because he doesn't let them learn anything from what they do.
Yeah, he kind of doesn't get them, is the general idea, isn't it? He doesn't understand his family, his wife or his children, and he's so self-important and self-interested. And then he doesn't learn the lesson properly, and it's just, that kind of defies the American narrative that all Hollywood films have, what?
But
it makes much more of a compelling film, I think. I think it's a positive in a way, because it's so unpredictable.
Yeah, I think that's the big word of this, it's just unpredictable and surprising. It goes in so many directions that you don't expect.
Yeah.
And it just keeps doing it.
keeps from confounding your expectations. So you know, the whole family are weird, and they're all of the brothers and sisters are kind of mooks or goofs or whatever kind of word is the right one for, like, Burkish family. And Muriel, in many ways, seems the more intelligent, possibly because she's the older one. But they've got a weird family situation, and Muriel wants to escape. And, you know, once her friends have said, we don't want to hang out with you, I guess the key thing is that Muriel is willing to lie and deceive people, even though she seems quite innocent all of the time. And the weirdest thing is her mum writes her blank checks for her job that she's been forced to take. As a, like, but, you know, from
Canadian,
she's going to sell, yes, she's going to sell cosmetics, is what the family would think. And she's just been given blank checks to pay for whatever. And she decides, hey, I'm going to cash these and join my horrible friends on their special, they're going on a honeymoon. But because, you know, the whole affair thing, the woman who got married at the start is annoyed and is going to have a honeymoon with her friends instead of her husband. And Muriel decides to just turn up and be, like, on a different table and annoy them, but also try and just be friends with them.
They were so angry when she showed up as well. Absolutely furious.
And she just looks so innocent as well. She's just sitting there happily on another table. And they just, like, call her names and chuck a drink in her face, and she just puts up with it. It's very, I kind of did like the jokes they did with that dynamic. But it is just, and then I guess that's the crucial thing, is she started to spend her parents' money without caring what it does, because they presumably haven't got that much. But she spends, you know, money on herself when she should be getting a job or whatever. And we understand, in a way. And then someone else turns up at this place, and it's just an old friend from school, is that right? Rhonda's a friend from school as well.
I don't know if they were particularly friends, but they were aware of each other.
Yeah, she's just like, oh, Muriel, I haven't seen you in years and whatever. Mm. And then she's being nice and like, oh, you're always quiet and let me be fun and we'll have a nice time. And then what I think what's key to the relationship between Muriel and Rhonda is nice and doesn't like her vacuous, horrible friends and puts them all in their place by being horrible to them because presumably they've always been like this. And that, and she kind of sticks up for Muriel and says, no, I'm here with Muriel and you're all horrible and ha ha ha, I pretended that I was going to be a cool, attractive woman and I am actually a mook like Muriel.
Yeah, they're kind of just like kindred spirits who like who should have been her friend all along.
Yeah, we don't really know why all of a sudden she's like best buddies, but it's good that they are. And it means that they get to dress up, much like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, they get to dress up as two of the members of ABBA, the women in this case. Well, actually, in both cases, isn't it? They both dress up as the women from ABBA.
Yes.
In both films. And mime ABBA in a bar. So that's another big connection, I would say.
Yeah, that's one of the main scenes that really sticks out for me. It's like, even though it's really simple, it's just them kind of miming and dancing. And then in the background, all their enemies are fighting each other.
Yeah.
But it's such a like a feel-good moment.
Like, it's because they keep miming and keep being happy, kind of mime at them. Yeah. And kind of highlights how ridiculous it is.
Like I was saying before, it felt like a crescendo moment. Like this was the end of this particular story arc, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
You're right. It could have been the end of the holiday film.
Yeah, you're right. I think, if anything, we should divide this story up into all its parts and make millions spinning out the longer stories.
what I'm going to do is either find out who does it in Australia or try and contact HBO and get them to make Muriel's Weddings and turn it into an episodic TV show.
Maybe she becomes a wedding consultant and she sets up all these people, because she's obsessed with weddings, she can create other people's weddings. And each one of those is like a mini drama.
Which is well how I felt that that's where it was obviously going to go.
What, she was going to become a wedding planner?
Yeah, that's how she would like find herself, like become a wedding planner at the end.
But you're thinking with your Hollywood brain.
I know, I shouldn't have.
See, where I thought it was going, and still could have, if it had been made now, it definitely could have had the ending I thought it was going to, which was she would always try and marry people, or, you know, the whole story would play out as is. But by the end, she would realise she's in love with her best friend, Rhonda, and they would get married at the end. And it would be, you see, Muriel's wedding wasn't a bloke wedding like you thought it was going to be. It was with this woman. See? And they could do that now. I don't know if they could do it in Australia, but they could do it in Britain. And that's, you know, good. And I thought it was going to go lesbian wedding at the end, guessed it, and I totally didn't. It still could have. It had a moment in the taxi where it's like, wait, do they love each other? No, they're just friends, it's fine. Or do they?
I think that might be a bit of a Rachel Griffiths thing. Because
you reckon?
I think in a lot of the things I've seen her in, she does have like a touch of bisexuality to her. And I don't know if that's just her, like, her aura and her personality, but I think that might be mainly due to her.
Yeah,
it's weird that, now that I'm thinking about it, how she has that.
But I mean, I know her mainly, as do you, Anthony, from 6 Feet Under, and she is kind of bisexual in that as well. So.
Yes.
Yeah, it might be just something she lends to the character. I don't know, but it had that feel like, oh well, this is where it's going, and it's just it concludes with Muriel does, you know, basically learn that she wants to move to Sydney and live with the one person who's been nice to her whole life, and is going to happily do that at the end, and that's good. But there are, you know, more hilarious things that happen along the way that make it into a full-blown comedy, not a bleak kitchen sink drama.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's the whole thing. The whole thing, it really is a comedy. I mean, if you think about it, 90% of it is comedy. But yeah, it's just that kind of 10% unexpected darkness, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, just tragedy in there. Yeah. There's a lot of sadness to it.
Yeah, there really is. And it remains just kind of like open ended, and it makes you feel like like everything will keep going more or less the way it is, and that's just life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
When the most tragic bit about this whole film for me was when her mum, she accidentally doesn't see her mum at the wedding, and her mum is just standing there crying. I was so. Oh,
it was.
Yeah.
That was a very harrowing moment.
Yeah, and we also, when she does shoplift some shoes, possibly by accident, it's in, like her feet are in quite the state. It's like it implied maybe she walked a long way to this wedding to see her daughter, like, you know, get hitched. The whole actual wedding that takes place, when she changes her name to Mariel and is now living off her parents' money initially. No, she spent her parents' money, then semi-responsible. Like, she ditches her problems by going to live in Sydney, but also earns money working in a video shop. I wonder if she rents out Muriel's wedding at any point.
Priscilla.
Yeah. Anyway, she goes to live in Sydney with her friend Rhonda, and I guess it's weird because that's not really that much to do with the wedding, but because of that, she's taking more steps to doing what she wants, and she wants to get married, and she's desperate because, you know, she hasn't really had any boyfriends, or like she's kind of a pathetic relationship-free person until... Oh, there's so many bits there. Like, there's about three all fighting for my attention, and I'm like, okay, focus on one. Her first boyfriend, then, once she's living in Sydney, she gets her first boyfriend.
Yes, who is, I guess, sweet is the word I'm looking for.
Normal.
Yeah, he's just so profoundly normal.
But nice.
His name is Bryce, I think.
That's a lame name.
And he's just so... He never really had a chance, poor guy.
Yeah, and it's a shame because they worked like really well together, and it seemed like they would have made a nice couple.
She could have helped Muriel become a normal, functioning person instead of a...
Yeah, but he really is then, like, kind of glossed over because she now has the obsession with marrying her, like, South African swimmer.
Yes, because in a way, the film should come to a conclusion where, I guess, she should marry that guy who she had her first proper date with and had a nice time. Like, it's...
Or at least give it another go. I'd have settled for that.
Or just, they could have implied something at the end where... And then she saw him again for another date or something.
Yeah, but I don't... Did she?
No, I don't think they did imply that they saw each other. Because he turned up at the wedding looking a bit forlorn.
That's what I was going to say. It's like the only other time you see him is at the wedding, and he seems really quite distraught.
Yeah, because it's all very funny when, like, she's living in Sydney and, like, having a nice time with her friends. You know, more ABBA plays, because every song in the thing is ABBA. But we get, like, ABBA montages of them out partying and dancing. And, like, Rhonda, like, hooks up with a black topless guy with sexy muscles and a sailor guy looking like the most cliched sailor ever. She hooks up with them, and they're making loads of noise in the bedroom. And Muriel is being more timid and bringing back her regular man date. And then that, you know, gets more farcical again before whamming on the tragedy. But like, does anyone want to describe what ensues when Muriel gets back to her little Sydney flat?
It's actually my most enduring memory of Muriel's wedding from the first time I watched it. Is she's wearing this sort of leather ensemble that's got a few different zips on it.
Yeah.
And when she brings him home, they're making out on a beanbag couch.
While watching TV, classy.
And he, they're getting along nicely, but in a kind of giggly way, because this is the first time she's done it. And then he accidentally unzips the beanbag. All of these beanbag balls come out. She starts laughing. The two guys that Rhonda brought home come out stark naked, think that Bryce is doing something terrible, and they start basically attacking and subduing him. She's screaming because these men are naked, and then Rhonda falls down because she's paralysed.
Yeah, that's weirdly, though I laughed at it, isn't the funny part. But it is weird because the guy is kind of shy and a bit timid initially, and then as soon as it's like, yeah, we can make out, he's suddenly instantly trying to tear his clothes off on hers. And he goes so fast. And I think, like, I don't know, like you say, the beanbag thing happens. But also, he gets shoved back into, like, the parrot's cage, and the parrot's cage breaks the window.
And the bird escapes. Yay! Not fond of caged birds, myself.
Hooray!
I thought there was just like a plastic dinosaur in there.
That could well have been the case.
Oh, it could have been. I wasn't paying that much attention.
Well, the dinosaur took flight and got away. But yeah, like, you know, there's a whole ruckus with the smash, and then these two naked guys start beating him up. And it is, and she's just having a giggling fit. And it is just like, that's, you know, okay, feel good, silly comedy. And then it just goes, don't start having a good time now. Mm. Her friend, who's all smeared with lipstick and sweaty and just had some fun with these guys, has suddenly fallen down and has a tumour and is having an operation because she has cancer and won't walk again.
Yay!
Yay! But it does go back to the comedy. It doesn't just suddenly, like, go, that's it. Because of its nature and the fact it doesn't deal with these big issues very much. It briefly, you know, clips the story so that we see how it progresses. But we don't get an in-depth, like, insight into the struggles. We just get a little, here's her trying to, you know, learn to walk again and it's not going well and Muriel's there for her. And then we have another side, like another little, like Anthony mentioned, another story, which it goes, we'll do this story now. And it's all about Muriel answering an ad for in like a singles magazine to get married to a South African swimmer who wants to get married so he can have a visa to swim for Australia. Is that right?
Something like that, yes.
Before we go on to that, I just want to say about... is it Brenda? Not Brenda. Rhonda. Rhonda's character, how she just... Even though she does have that moment during, like, rehabilitation, where she's like, I'm struggling here, and I can't walk. She has enough personality and character to just kind of get on with it.
Yeah, there's a sense that she's depressed that she, you know, will have to go and live with her mum again, which she doesn't want.
But she comes off as more than capable of, like, being able to do it on her own.
Yeah, it does seem like she's in shock about it, and you would be, but that she will be all right with it in the end.
Yeah.
If she, you know, has Muriel, which is put into jeopardy because Muriel has this wedding obsession that's been going on. I mean, she's secretly been visiting various bridesmaid stores and trying on, you know, wedding dresses. And lying and saying, you know, variations on someone like her mum or her sister, you know, is dying in hospital or in a coma, and getting a picture of herself in the dress and creating an album of wedding photos of weddings she is not having. She's a nut job.
That was...
Well, I guess it's just her way of coping with it all.
Yeah, or not coping, really.
And really, she's not really doing any harm to anyone. She's just kind of taking photos in pretty dresses.
I have a similar thing. I don't dress in wedding dresses. Don't get that. I mean, I've dressed up as a woman before, but I'm not obsessed with weddings. I have a similar thing in that I always want to go to an estate agent and see loads of big houses, like mansions and really, like, stuff I'm never going to be able to afford. And pretend, like... I could potentially buy it and, like, just nose around people's houses of an afternoon. Like, I think it would be just really fun just to go, oh, look at their stuff and, you know, like, just voyeuristically peer in on people's lives that, you know, I'm definitely, you know, I'm just not going to be buying a mansion anytime soon, am I?
That's a bit different, though, because...
I do tell the estate agents that I'm dying of cancer and I want to be in a picture. Oh, no, my mother's dying of cancer and I need a picture for her to see me in the house. No, sorry, it's different.
It's the level of hoodwinking to which she goes is quite excessive.
And it's kind of wrong because her friend is, you know, dying. Well, no, not dying, but her friend does have cancer and it's kind of inspired her lies in a way. And it's just back to her kind of, you know, selfish, weird ways of deluding herself and being irresponsible. And, you know, this delusion about herself and wanting to get married eventually does lead to her actual wedding, which is, you know, it's a big point of the film. I mean, that's what it's called. But it's more interesting because it's a wedding of convenience, isn't it?
Yes, and it's not technically Muriel's wedding, Because the sign they put up is Mariel's wedding.
Because she wants to change her name to be different and get away from her old life and be a new person. And, you know, switching the U to an A, hilarious comedy.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something to be read into that. Like, yes, she's changing her name, but she's only really changing one letter. So I think that's a slight microcosm of what's actually happening to her.
Yeah, very good. As a character. Very good. And so, yeah, Mariel's wedding is
it's perfect, more or less, isn't it? It goes...
Yeah, you're right, it does.
Pretty perfect. Like, it's... Well, it's her perfect wedding, how she imagines it should be. Because she's got, like, all of her friends are her... Well, her old friends slash enemies are her... her bridesmaids, and they're all kind of fawning over her. And
it's kind of a celebrity thing because this guy's like quite a successful swimmer.
Yeah, and everyone's just kind of bewildered at her looking amazing.
Her dad's proud of her, and then the people who do care about her are having a hard time because Rhonda's in a wheelchair and feels like, you know, it's potentially a sham, and that she's like feels bad about herself because she's in a wheelchair. And does, you know, having a tough time, and her mum isn't even there yet. And it's kind of when Muriel becomes the most horrible she becomes, because she's so caught up in her own obsession with weddings and enjoying the moment of marrying this handsome man who doesn't love her. Like, it kind of is her to her lowest point, in a way.
Yes. And I suppose, like, some of her thoughts on, like, what marriage is have come directly from her parents, who I'm guessing aren't, like, the best role models for her over the years as to what, like, a working marriage should have been.
No.
So she's just quite happy to just jump in there just because she can have her wedding.
Kind of mooch off someone else's success and personality in a way, and be defined by her husband rather than being a wife rather than, you know, being herself, I guess is the point.
Mm.
And it's such a weird thing how it comes about, because she looks it up in the singles magazine and finds out that there's this attractive South African guy who wants a visa. I don't know if that's anything linking to our friend Jamie, who's currently not here, and his wedding. I don't know if he's moving to America and he's getting a marriage of convenience for a visa. I don't know if there's... I'm sure Tiffany and Jamie love each other very much. If you're listening, American people who judge these things, I'm not implying anything. I take it all back. I'm sure they love each other, and that's why they're getting married, not for the visa. Just saying.
Okay.
The South African guy is beautiful, but is clearly... I'm just moving on, it's fine. Is clearly not interested in Muriel. And it has that, like, the same way every character in the film seems to be like, "Oh, Muriel, you... are normal, but look a bit weird. Ugh, I don't like you." Kind of reaction to her. But has to, because, you know, very few options for people who are willing to get married for money rather than anything else.
It's a weird little side story. Well, how it turns out. Because, yeah. Like, yes, they get married and then they're just kind of just living together separately, if you know what I mean.
It doesn't feel like for very long.
Yeah. And then, like, Muriel goes back to... She had the news about her mother, and she attends the funeral, and then he just kind of shows up and decides that he likes her now.
Well, he feels sorry for her, and I think he feels duty-bound as her technical husband to show some sympathy. And then they do the thing that I've only seen in High Fidelity, where it's kind of, "Oh, you're grieving, I know... let's have sex to solve that, or because you're sad about the death of a parent, we must make love, and it's the only thing we can do in this circumstance." So I don't know what that's about, but it makes for an unusual twist in the film, where suddenly this marriage of convenience is consummated in a really unusual circumstance, where the guy's just trying to be nice, and he doesn't do it to be nice, he just suddenly... likes her, like you say, she's likes her because, I don't know, he's realised she's a person and not just some horrible thing he has to do to win gold.
I think that was the thing where, because she's lost someone, he kind of realises, well, I've been really horrible to her and she is a person. I could, you know, be a human about it.
Yeah, and it's almost like, okay, so they've connected with each other now, and maybe out of this sham marriage could come a real strong relationship, and they can build on it. And again, this would lead to a kind of an American Hollywood movie ending where these two people who got married for, you know, false pretenses suddenly are in love, you know. But no, she kind of matures up after that, and the next morning is like, no, we're not going to have a relationship. I am leaving to, you know, I'm just leaving, and this, I can't do this, and it's a lie. And fair enough, that's the right thing to do. But it is just, wait, you've just connected for the first time and you're leaving, what?
Yeah, it could have gone either way, and I think most audiences would have been satisfied with either way, really.
It was the right thing, though, to leave a false marriage. I mean, they could have built on it, they could have got divorced and then had a relationship and then, you know, see where that goes. But it is just, no, I mean, the guy is just a rich, like, I don't know, he's just obsessed with swimming and isn't interested in her. So the fact that he showed some kindness is not that big a deal, really. So she should leave, and she wishes him luck, even though I'm pretty sure he'll get disqualified and can't win the swimming. Whatever, we don't really care about it that much. Muriel's learnt a lesson at last, and is going back home to, I don't know, she goes back home to find Rhonda again, really, doesn't she?
Yes, well, she's gone home for her mother's wedding, but like, it's all...
Not her mother's wedding.
Her mother's funeral, and it's just all hit her now, I guess. And it you know, it just so happens that Rhonda's there, and she has realised that this is the only person, really, who I have been truthful with and likes me, essentially.
Yeah.
And I've been, you know, I have not been thinking of her, and it's time I made amends.
By crowbarring her out of her house with her mum and away from the horrible, mean girls that have befriended Rhonda now that she's home. And, they go off waving goodbye to all of the rubbish places in... What was the place called? Spit something?
Porpoise Spit.
Lovely name. So they wave goodbye to all of the stuff in their town, and they live happily ever after in Sydney, working in shops across the road from each other. Or something, we assume.
Yeah, it's left hopeful but open, as I think, like most of the... like, storylines for all the characters is.
Yeah. I think that's what catches you off guard, really, is how much it just sort of leaves as is. It doesn't, you know, have anything built to massive crescendos. It just sort of goes, well, that was a bit of a story here, a bit of a story there. There was a kind of sub-story we didn't talk about where the dad is getting sued for being corrupt and taking bribes. And he may have, he may not have, they don't really get into it. But he certainly looks guilty, and he's always trying to spin the things going on in his real life to make himself look good, to win the court cases and things, isn't he?
Yes, he's very... He's got that kind of a businessman, politician thing about him, where he seems to like have all the ambition, but he'd never had any of the success.
Yeah, and even though at the end he doesn't really... I mean, he might have gotten off or something, but he still is obnoxious, and he gets, you know, put in his place a little bit by Muriel, but not really. And he's left to just deal with the fact that his wife died and that the woman he's having an affair with won't marry him because she doesn't want all of the family baggage. And he's left in an awkward spot where he's suddenly on his own and hasn't got his wife to rely on. But it doesn't go into it a lot. He just sort of stares off, you know, like, and we're left to be, you know, make up our own minds about it, I suppose.
It doesn't feel like he ever wanted to have a family.
Yeah, they were just there to be something to help his political career.
Yeah, plus he's just always shoved them on his wife. So I don't think he's ever really considered them.
And he's so ashamed of them as well. I think the hideous icing on the horrible cake of their disgusting marriage is the fact that even at this woman's funeral... he's obsessed with how he managed to get the Prime Minister of Australia or whatever to say something, or like, it's quite a high up politician that he gets to have said something about his wife. And it's all about that and how it affects him.
Yeah, he even gets his son to deliberately look at the press to see if they write it down.
And it's the most horrible villain at that moment. And you just think, you don't deserve to just watch cricket and have tea with your kids as a sign that you've changed. You haven't changed. And, oh, it's frustrating. I preferred him when he was Bob in Priscilla.
It's because he was a wishy-washy liberal like us.
Maybe so. He does play the polar opposite in this, I guess. Oh, yeah. So, you know, any other bits we need to mention about Muriel and her wedding or a non-wedding or Mariel or whatever?
Only that, how do I put this? Like, the film is called Muriel's Wedding.
Yes.
But Muriel doesn't actually technically have a wedding. So yes, I can't help but think there's more to that title than meets the eye.
Yeah.
Discuss.
Discuss. It is wrong and false advertising to call it Muriel's Wedding.
I'm just like, does wedding have more implications? Like, just kind of general kind of marriage of two ideas or two worlds or
wow.
Something like that coming together.
I don't know.
But that, I can't quite make that fit. But I feel like there's more to the title than it simply seems.
The fact that the only wedding Muriel had was under the name Mariel, and that was a sham. And it was about her getting over the fact that she wanted a wedding. But yet, at the same time, it is called Muriel's Wedding, so it should have ended in a lesbian marriage between her and Rhonda. That's what I'm saying.
I think the title's more about the wedding in her head than it is her physical wedding. And how she's obsessed with her wedding and wanting to be married. But how, in the end, it's not what she really wanted.
Yes.
And actually having a wedding is what taught her that it's not what she really wanted.
Yeah, because the Muriel's wedding is always a wedding of fantasy that never really happens in the film, isn't it? That's the key, I think, to understanding the slightly misadvertised title. Mm. So yeah, you know, it's got some stuff to think about as a film. And even though you maybe don't know how to feel after watching it, I think, you know, at least myself, you look back at it and go, yeah, that was good. That was different. And I went on a strange ride where I felt simultaneously good and bad about, you know, Muriel, and I feel very confused by her family situation. And yet, it's still an upbeat, positive ending that I think you can relate to if you're either from a small town or an outsider or a bit of a loser or, you know, like, you'll kind of feel good at the end that someone has gained their independence and stopped their weird wedding obsession.
Well, that's the thing. I liked it the first time because it was about... It wasn't about a person who was clear. It's about a person who is odd and strange and just getting through it most of the time.
Yeah. And she likes ABBA. And she does weird stuff that if anyone else did it, it would be, oh, you're a horrible person. How could you cash blank checks from your parents and lie and not take responsibilities? And it's like, yeah, but look at her face. She just looks so gormless and yet somehow still tantalizing and beautiful. Damn you, Muriel, you're so confusing. At some point, I did expect them to do the Hollywood thing of, oh, when her hair's tied back and she's in a frumpy jet, when she's in a frumpy dress, she looks awful. But if she lets her hair down and puts on a bit of makeup, wow, Muriel, you look amazing. Wait, they kind of did that with the wedding dress, but still, it was that weird combination of American and British, which formed Australia, I suppose, in some way.
The film's just constantly playing with your expectations of it. And it just takes you to new places that... Well, I won't say any other film has taken you before, but like this was made in 1994. That's like 20 years ago. So I think this might be one of the more like groundbreaking ones of kind of marrying comedy with tragedy in such a broad mainstream way.
Yeah. Well done using married and together.
I didn't even notice.
Oh, yeah, right. You wrote that down before we did this and said, I'm going to say married things together.
I wish I was that collected.
So, what rating can we give this? And, you know, final thoughts, if there are any more. And I kind of said my piece, I would say. I mean, I liked it. And, you know, I don't want to reiterate myself. But what wedding rating can we give it? I mean, you know, is it a do we give it a wedding? Do we, you know, like, how do we rate this thing?
I was going to think that maybe we should give it an ABBA song, but I realise I don't know enough ABBA songs.
Well, Muriel seemed to think her life was going as well. How did she put it, Abby?
I wrote it down. Bear with me.
Okay.
When I lived in Pauper Spit, I just stayed in my room and listened to ABBA songs. Sometimes I'd stay there all day. And since I met you and moved to Sydney, I haven't listened to one ABBA song. And it's because now my life is as good as an ABBA song. It's as good as Dancing Queen.
Yeah. that was a good line and well read. And she does listen to ABBA songs when she's at her most low point, I suppose, when she's just feeling bad for herself and Rhonda and things. So there is a moment where it's not her life is no much. There is a point where her life isn't like an ABBA song anymore. But is our rating? So are we saying the film Muriel's Wedding is like Dancing Queen?
That would make sense. I'd say it's like Muriel's Wedding is not like a wedding. It's like the reception afterwards, which is always much more fun. But has always got that kind of real kind of all that you've got all your family and friends. They're all drunk and just things are going to happen.
People are going to go home in wheelchairs. There's going to be abuse from horrible.
Yeah, it's just a collection of all these characters who you may want there, you may not want there, but you know they have to be there because it's your wedding, and you know. And it's just, it's the fun part of the wedding, but it's also the kind of slightly darker part where, you know, people might start getting drunk and start thinking about why they're not married themselves and get into old family fights, and that's always like the undercurrent.
Bridesmaids sleeping with a groom and stuff. it's like a slightly fun, but, you know, realistic after party.
Yes, because the wedding is all about tradition and doing things right and doing things the proper way. But then that's what you let your hair down then in the reception afterwards, and that's where like the true kind of wedding is, I suppose.
Yeah, you're right. I like that. Have you got any wedding metaphor to rate Muriel's Wedding as?
I do.
Go on.
Muriel's Wedding is a wedding where, let's say you, for the sake of me explaining it, you didn't know the bride was a man, and you don't know if anyone else didn't know, so you don't want to bring it up.
I didn't know the bride was a man.
Say they're a transvestite.
Right.
So, it looks like a wedding, it sounds like a regular wedding, but for you, it's a very strange experience, because some of the elements are very different, and you don't know if you're the only one who didn't know.
But if you've got the right attitude, you could just roll with it. I didn't know I was into transvestites, but I guess now that I'm married, I'll enjoy the film for what it is. An Australian strange comedy that is fine and enjoyable, you know, and a man.
I didn't mean that you were the groom. I meant that you were in attendance.
Oh, well, thank goodness. Whew, bullet dodged. Okay, so it's a surprise under the wedding dress. Right, okay. I'm going to go with a similar idea, but I'm going to say it's like a wedding cake, a very, like, bold, like the sort of wedding cake they would make on Cake Boss, a really elaborate, extra special wedding cake. But on the outside, you know, it looks really American and classic and kind of traditional. And then you cut into it, and it's this strange, weird fruitcake. Like, that's, you know, you're not expecting it to be the flavour it is. It's got a different kind of wrong taste. But once you've had an extra slice or two, well, not that you're going to ever gorge yourself on wedding cake, but, you know, you get used to the taste and you enjoy the marzipan and the fruitcake eventually and kind of go, yeah, do you know what? I'm glad it's different inside to what I imagined. And it's not just, you know, Rice Krispie treats or something. That's good. So it's like a surprise filling in a wedding cake that you like after tasting it for a bit.
No, I get you. That makes sense. Yeah. Especially as like the film is all about kind of appearances and your outer self as opposed to your inner self.
Yeah, and it's definitely a mix of tone. Like, a lot of the stuff we end up talking about is just that tonally a bit odd and, you know. And afterwards, at the reception that Anthony's had for his weird transfer... Not his weird wedding, but the wedding image, I guess, that Anthony's created with the reception, there's this weird cake is in bits, people are going off with their transvestite brides, mm-hmm. and we're left a bit confused and disorientated, but fundamentally, it's a good story to tell at the end, or something. So, with that said, we, you know, finish the podcast. I guess we could dedicate it to the wedding of Tiffany and Jamie, who become the Thomases, I think, now. Well done, the two of you. And I hope you're enjoying that imagery. I hope your wedding was just as entertaining as that rubbish we just talked about.
Yes, best of luck to you both.
Mwah.
Yep. Happy?
I didn't take you for an air kisser.
Mm. Neither did I till it happened.
Oh, Anthony, you're such an air kisser. Who knew? Are you gonna add anything, Abby, to the well wishes of the Thomases?
Well, we've mostly said it all there, so other than yay,
yeah, well done. This is going to be so weird when one of you is listening to this back in tears. No, the marriage will be fine. I'm so pessimistic. It'll be. I'm sure it was nice. And I'm going to stop awkwardly linking it to a real person and just say, catch us next time for a less themed podcast about some other rubbish, no doubt.
Wouldn't count on.
We'll definitely think of another stupid theme, and I'll awkwardly talk about stuff no one can understand apart from the three of us.
Yay!
Yay!
Yay.
Bye!
Bye, everyone!
Wed out.